Hey everyone, and welcome back to the Adopting and Fostering Home Podcast. Wherever you are on your fostering or adopting journey, we're here to provide the resources and tools you need. And I think today's guest will be a great source of encouragement to you. Hey everyone, thanks for making time to join us again today. You are listening to the Adopting and Fostering Home Podcast. Now, we're going to have a candid conversation today about foster care, driving big vans, and how to navigate the hard moments. But first, a big welcome and thank you to my guest co-host today, Michelle Chitwood. Michelle, thanks for joining me.
Thank you. I'm so excited to be here again today.
Oh, good. I just love it when you can bring in your perspective. And a lot of you know that Michelle and Paul serve with the International Mission Board, and Kevin and I are here with the North American Mission Board. And we work together. We love these folks. We have a lot in common, and we are working together to just bring the gospel now that we've joined together in Sin Relief to all over the world. So it's just exciting for us to get to work together. But Michelle, today we also have our good friend Krista Grigg. And
yes, another Kentucky girl.
Another Kentucky girl. That's right. I've known Krista since she was a teenager, and just been such a blessing. We love her family, her extended family dearly. But so Krista, tell us about you guys. How do you go from having three kids to being a huge family of 11?
Well, it all started as a result of Michelle Chitwood. So I'm glad she's here with us today, because we had three biological children, and my husband and I could not decide on how God would continue to grow our family. We knew he wasn't finished with us, but we had different opinions, and he wanted to have another biological child. And I wanted to pursue international adoption, and we just could not get settled on the same page. We didn't have a piece about what direction we should go. And so one day I was home scrolling Facebook, and I came across a post that Michelle Chitwood had put out with Sunrise Children's Services and the Kentucky Baptist Convention. And they were calling on all Kentucky Baptist churches to be the one. And when they said be the one, they put out a campaign that said they needed one family from each Kentucky Baptist church to consider fostering through Sunrise Children's Services. And that if we did that, then we could put all of Kentucky's foster kids in Christian homes.
Wow.
And so I followed Michelle's posts and read up on Sunrise Children's Services and watched a short film documentary called Removed.
It's a killer, isn't it?
It's a hook for sure.
It is a hook. I use it in training, and I do it on the end of the first night in foster care training, and there's not a, I mean, no one has words after the first part of that film. I'm sorry, go ahead.
No. So I watched that, and my husband at the time was studying in Louisville at the seminary, and so I called him and I said, you just have to stop what you're doing. He said, well, I'm in the middle of the library. I said, I don't care. You've got to go watch. You've got to watch this video. And so he watched it, and I stayed on the phone so I could get his reaction. And he was crying and I was crying. And we just said, okay, this is it. This is how God wants to grow our family. And it was the first time that we had both been on the same page. And so we just felt like it was definitely of the Lord.
Well, I love that you know, you gave Brian time, because you were heading in a different direction than he was, even talking about international adoption. That's what we knew at Highview, right? We did that, you know, that culture had just grown. It was just for that season, seemed to be where the Lord called us. But so Brian's sitting in the library when he sees the video.
He was. and crying in the library.
Wow. It's amazing how the Lord reaches our hearts, even though, you know, and it takes a while for him to move us, and he just so kindly just ushers us into his plan for our life, waiting on us to kind of join him where he is. And what a beautiful picture of that. And so you go from three kids to how many?
We have nine at the moment. We have nine children at the moment. So we began foster care in 2015 is when we became certified. We got our first placement a couple months later. It was a sibling group of three children. And we have since adopted that sibling group And from that time on, we have just been fostering. And so right now we have another sibling group of three. And so we currently have 9 kids.
Oh, wow. Wow. Could you tell us a little bit about your training? I know it was a little bit different. Sunrise, I think, came to your church.
Yes, they did. So after we decided that we wanted to become foster parents, we talked to our church family just about the need. And there were 3 other families in our church that all decided to foster alongside of us. And to really put that in perspective, we have a church of maybe 80 to 100 people. We're a very small rural church.
Right.
And so 4 families.
Yeah, that's huge.
We all decided we were going to foster together. And so we approached Sunrise Children's Services and said, hey, we've got 4 families. Mm. Would you consider bringing the training to us? And they did that. So over the course of 4 weekends, we met on Friday, Saturdays. And over the course of 4 weekends, we were all certified.
Wow. Wow, that's amazing. So yeah. How, having all those families surround you, did you all feel more supported? Do you feel like that's a good model for other churches to use?
Very much so. And I think that it really makes a difference just having that support right there within your own church family. I know other friends who have decided that they want to foster. You know, maybe they're just on their own. They don't have any close friends that are fostering, and they just get so easily discouraged. But I know that just our four families, we have now all adopted from foster care, and we have walked through it together, which I think has made a huge difference.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I love your post about, you know, you start a post one day about, hey, church, and you said, it just seems like when I start feeling overwhelmed, God puts on the hearts of people around me to love us, to cook for my tribe. And you added that some days you just have to push aside, you know, the hard, Krista. I know it is. Some seasons are just tough. And you make a decision to focus on family and to celebrate that all 11 of you are together, you're loved, you're healthy, you're safe, and you're safe, and Jesus is there in the midst of you. And I just love that post. I love your transparency in the midst of this.
That's another way I feel like our church has really been involved, is that our senior adults who are past the age of being able to welcome children into their home, they're the ones who deliver those meals.
Yeah.
And so they knew that we were going into NTI again as a result of COVID, and they know just the stress that 9 children can bring. And so they are so good to just be aware of what is happening in our foster families and to just show up at your door with a meal. And that's one awesome way that even our senior adults can be involved in foster care.
Yeah. When we first moved to Georgia, we got involved in the local church here. And to see senior adults say, hey, I'll have diapers delivered by Amazon at the door. I mean, they loved seeing how they could be a part of that. For me too, I'm kind of I'm way out of the diaper phase, not just kind of, but to just get to do that again, to just get to be a part of that again. But it is so true. Everyone can do something, and that's a beautiful picture of that.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah, Diedrich Bonhoeffer, I was trying to search for a few quotes that I thought would be suitable for your church, but he said that the church is only the church when we exist for others. And gosh, your church is such an example of that. You are existing for others. And you know, foster care, you hear that word, our society hears that word, and you automatically think scary, dark, really problemed kids. And for your church to step up and do that together is just an amazing thing. You all are existing for that. And I think God is really being glorified through that.
Thank you. You started it, Michelle. You started it.
No, God started.
That's great. That's great. I think that's the beauty of a church that size, Krista. I mean, mm-hmm. I grew up like that. I love it. Is that you really get to know the heartbeat of one another, and you can see how you can support one another. I mean, I just, I just love that picture. When I think of the house church in the New Testament, that's what I think about. And our planters who are out, beating down the doors and showing up to meet with people and having folks in their homes and trying to social distance and, you know, all that stuff with their mask and still trying to move forward with the gospel and in foster care and to, you know, to be relevant among our culture right now with the gospel. I just love that size church and how you guys can do that.
It is unique. And even I know this placement that we have right now, our foster daughter, she had celebrated a birthday 2 days before she came into care. And so it was just a very difficult time. And I remember her older brother said, you know, she never even got a birthday cake. And I said, okay, well, we've got to do something about that. And so I reached out to our church family that first week. They had not even met this child yet. And that first Sunday, right after service, one of our families opened their home. We all had lunch. We got a cake. And every member of our congregation pretty much had gone and purchased a birthday gift for this child that they had never
goodness.
Even met. And it's just, it really is. I grew up in a large church. I grew up at Highview. But there is something very unique about the small church. And like you said, how we're just able to really just operate as a family.
Yes, it is so true.
Yeah. So what was her response to all that?
Oh, she cried.
And you cried.
Everybody cried. but it was great because she, you know, she came to our home with nothing pretty much. And so by the end of the first week, she was covered in clothes and toys and, you know, all sorts of things that she could enjoy for herself. So it was good.
Well, I just wonder how you went from 3 children to 6 children to 9 children.
Yes.
Your 3 biological kids, I don't like just separating kids, but just for the sake of the conversation here, the 3 biological kids, how has their world changed? Have you seen this kind of change them?
Oh, yes, definitely. So they are, our 3 biological children were 12, and then we have a set of twins. And so they were 8 when we began foster care, and pretty much everything about their life has changed, with the exception of their bedrooms. That was one commitment that we made to them, is that they would never share a room with another child. And so we wanted them to be able to have some space that was just their space, because we knew so many other things were going to change. But they have done a remarkable job. And I tell people often that there are things that I could have never taught them apart from fostering. I feel like they would never have had the compassion that they have. They would never have had just the understanding of the world that they have if we had not fostered.
Oh, yeah. I totally agree, because there's so, you know, our kids can get so consumed with the things in life. But we really have to go out of our way in this world so that our children can see, feel, smell, be, you know, just use all of their senses and see the brokenness that's in the world and how we are called to that. And, you know, foster care adoption truly, truly does that. Missions does that. But the thing about foster care is when you take someone in your home and, you know, it may be temporary. And I think as a family, it calls us to rise up and really rally in this season that we may, you know, this, it may be a short season, a long season, that we have children, you know, in our home. So now, do y'all feel more called to just continue to foster, or how's the Lord leading this now?
Well, I started this foster care journey saying I would never take more than 2 kids. And then I took 3. And then
of course you
I
did.
Said, then I said I would never take a teenager. And I took 2 teenage girls. And this go round, I have said that we are not going to adopt any more children. And I'm already kind of feeling in my heart a backpedal on that. So I don't really know other than I don't know. I don't exactly know what God has for us. This current placement, I feel like, will just be a foster placement. But I'm not going to say I'll never.
Yeah. Right. God, he has a tricky way of doing that. We kind of start riding the wave, and all of a sudden we're already to the very end of the sand because we've ridden away so long, which is good. I mean, a lot of times we probably wouldn't even start if we knew what was in front of us. But I wanted to ask a little bit about respite care, and do you have partners in your church that you do respite care for and with, and if so, how has that affected your ability to do what you're doing? Because it's pretty amazing.
Well, I had never actually done respite with a child until this placement, and the current placement that we have. And I had always felt like respite was maybe not best for the child. This is the way I used to think. And so I was always very reluctant to do respite with any placement that I had, because I never wanted them to feel like I was giving them away or sending them away. And so this placement came, and now we're up to 9 children, and life became very overwhelming with COVID. And we kind of had a little bit of a crisis situation where one of our children was in danger. And so we had to do just an immediate respite. Mm-hmm. And we had to remove a child for one night so that we could clear our heads and kind of get on the same page mentally with where we needed to be. And through that experience, I learned the beauty of respite. Until I actually did it, I never understood the importance of it. And so we have actually done respite several times through this placement. And I know we did respite for an entire week so that our family could go on a vacation that we had had planned for over a year. And when we arrived back home, I was completely reset mentally to go back into to where we were. And I never understood the beauty of respite, but I have since learned that it is a very valuable thing. And our church families, so we have the other 3 families in our church, and so we do respite for one another. Which makes it wonderful, because the kids don't feel like they're being sent off to a stranger's home for a weekend. Instead, they just get to go to one of our, you know, best friends' homes. And so it works out well.
Yes. Yeah, I use respite as well, but I use respite with a lady in our church. And so this lady became, you know, just another person to love on the kids who don't really have an extended family, but that becomes their extended family.
Yes. And another really neat thing that happened as a result of respite in our church is that we did respite early on for another family, another Sunrise foster family. We took a sibling group for a weekend and provided respite for that family. Meanwhile, we took them to church just like we would on that Sunday. And one of the families, the other foster families in our church, met these 3 children. And so they kind of got to know them a little bit while they were with us. Well, they went back to their foster home. And then a month or so later, their foster home needed respite again. So we took them back in again for respite. And this family in our church continued to get to know these children. And as a result of us doing respite and the foster family in our church getting to know these kids, they've now been adopted by them.
Oh, wow. That's amazing. So that is incredible.
It was like a matchmaking scenario through respite.
Oh, wow. That's a great story. It really is. You know, you just, when the Lord's asking us to broaden our tent and open our lives to children, even if it's just like Crystal, like you just said, just for a weekend or, you know, 2 days here, 2 days there, He is working and moving around us in ways we cannot comprehend.
Yes.
And, you know, for those who are listening who may not know this, but you can be a respite foster parent without being a foster parent. So in other words, you can be trained to only do respite for people who are fostering. So, you know, if a listener wants to get involved, but they don't want to take on foster kids full time, this is definitely something that's needed. And, you know, for Christians, for respite kids to end up in a Christian home for a weekend and go to church, I mean, who knows? Yes. That could be life-changing, and especially for the three you had. I mean, they found their home because of that respite placement. So, wow, that's just incredible.
Yeah, it's a pretty neat story. And I think respite is sort of like playing grandma and grandpa.
You get to
invite those kids over for the weekend and do all the fun stuff and then send them back. And so it's a great opportunity for those who don't want to commit to fostering full time, but still want to be a part.
Yes.
Well, I want to kind of go to some, Krista, I just know you've just always been so steady in your walk with the Lord, even as a teenager. You were trained in it in your home growing up. But you posted quite a bit about just a motto that you, I don't know, it just seemed to be just showing up in some things you shared. But you just really believe that even if not, he is still good.
Mm-hmm.
And Isaiah 43:2, I know you've shared a lot, but the Lord has told us, I will be with you when you pass through the waters and when you pass through the rivers. They will not overwhelm you. So, Krista, what has that meant for you and Brian and your family? Why has this, if not, he is still good, meant so much to you?
Well, our second son, his name was Nathan, and he was a biological child, and he was born with a congenital birth defect. And so he died at birth. And I really, that's a thing that I think God has really used to prepare us for foster care.
Mm-hmm.
Is we have had to learn to love and release and grieve and realize that even when things on the outside do not look like they are good, that God is still good and he will work all things together for good, as his word says. And so we learned that through the loss of our son, Nathan, and it has just been something that has just been constant and steady in our lives ever since. And so the brokenness of foster care, I can grieve that in the same way I grieved my son, and the Lord carries me through that the same way he carried me through when I lost my son. And so I wouldn't say that foster care taught me that. Nathan taught me that, but foster care has been where it's really played out.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree. No matter the circumstances, no matter the hard days or even hard, long seasons we may have in this calling, with parenting any of our kids or in church planning or, you know, in trying to build your church or love your community, when we walk through the pain and the trials of life, because it's inevitable, we are just going to have hard times, that truth remains. Like you said, we are still his and he is still ours. And he absolutely is still a good, good, kind father. And, you know, just knowing, gals, as we get up in the morning, and Michelle, I know you can speak into this, that when we get up and things may not seem to be going like we think they should, which is almost every day, it seems like, God is still good, and he is still working, even when we can't see it.
Yeah, and I'm reminded in Psalms, well, throughout the Bible, we're just reminded of what a short time we have in this life.
Right.
On earth, talks about our lives being a vapor. In Psalms, it says our days are but a passing shadow. And Krista and Brian, just the fact that you all are living your days like you are is such a life well lived.
Mm-hmm.
I know that you won't look back and think, man, I wish I would have done that, because you are doing that. You're doing exactly what God has called you to do, even when it is very difficult. And thankfully we have joy in that too. Even in the difficult, we have joy.
Yes.
And when the world looks at us like we have poor heads because, you know, 9 kids are getting out of a really big van. God's glorified in that too. So, how do you have any friends or people in your life who are not Christians who have, I don't know, it's been the fact that you're fostering has been such a big witness that they actually see what the gospel is.
I don't think people fully understand. So I I also work at our local courthouse 3 days a week. I work part time. And so I do drive a 12-passenger van that looks like a UPS truck. And so the people at the courthouse are often talking about the UPS van out there. And so they all know that I foster, and some of them understand it. Many of them don't fully understand why I would want to have 9 kids. But, you know, it is an opportunity to have great gospel conversations on why I do what we do. And just even this morning, I'm supposed to be at work right now, but my boss and the people that I work with in the office have said, hey, I have an opportunity to do a podcast on fostering. And they said, yes, you know, go for it. We'll see you this afternoon.
Oh,
and
wow.
So it's just a wonderful opportunity to have conversations that relate to the gospel.
Yeah, because you just look different. Yeah. I mean, it's just a different path.
We do.
It really is. And, you know, I feel the same way. We never walk in a restaurant where heads don't turn. I get it.
Yes.
And I know, Chris, you were talking about you have to sit at 2 tables in a restaurant.
Yes. Yes. Yeah, COVID is making us split up. And so I'm like, hey, but we're one family. And they're like, no
don't
more
care.
Than 8.
Yeah. Well, maybe that's a chance for you and Brian to get to sit together. So
right.
Oh, wow. That's been great. So anything else, like if you've got maybe we've got some listeners who are in a smaller church and they can't seem to make, you know, to get any treadway going here on getting this ministry jump started at their church. What's a couple of things you tell them, Krista?
I would just say to keep having the conversation.
Yeah.
To find ways to engage in foster care. Maybe it's through, I know one of the things that our church has done is at Christmas time, oftentimes foster agencies are looking for sponsors. And so that's a great way to kind of catch the vision of foster care is maybe sponsoring some foster kids for Christmas, or maybe having some guest speakers come in from local foster agencies. I mean, there's lots of ways to kind of try to catch the vision in your local church. But I would just keep the conversation going. Don't give up talking about foster care just because it seems like nobody's interested. I know one of the foster families that in our church that actually ended up becoming certified, they actually talked to us about foster care years before we even thought about it. And so I knew when it came time, when I knew that God was calling us to foster, I remembered that conversation that they had with us years before and went straight to them and said, hey, do you remember how you said you were interested in this? And so just keep the conversation going.
Yeah.
That's one thing I would suggest.
Yeah. And do those tangible things too, like you said, just keep the need in front of people and keep raising that awareness. Like you're saying, keep the conversation going.
Mm-hmm. So Krista, how many kids in your church right now are from the foster care system?
So of the our 4 church families, we have had a total of 21 placements, 21 kids that have been placed with us. 11 of those have been adopted by us.
Oh, wow. So you run 80 to 100, and at some point you've had 21 kids come through your church. Wow.
Yes.
So a fourth of your church have been foster kids. I love it.
We always laugh and say that we're growing our church through foster care.
That's great.
Right. But currently, right now, I guess we have 11. Let me think. We have 11, and then we have 13. So we have the 11 that are adopted, and then we have 5 that are on placement right now.
Oh,
so,
wow.
That is amazing. Yeah. That is amazing. Just what the body of Christ is supposed to look like. It is a beautiful journey. It is.
Yeah. Wow. Amazing. Wonderful. Krista, when Paul and I decided to foster, we wanted to get teenagers, and you had mentioned, but we didn't get teenagers. It's funny how God works that out, but you had mentioned that you said you would not want teenagers, but you ended up having 2 teenagers. Do you have any thoughts on that or any stories about how that played out for your family when you didn't think you would want any teenagers?
Sure. I definitely did not want teenagers. I said that I would never have anyone older than my biological son, my oldest son. But the Lord gave us an opportunity to welcome a girl into our home that was getting ready to transition. She was 2 months away from being 18 years old.
Oh, and goodness.
So she was going to transition out of foster care and either go back home or into independent living. And we also learned that she was an atheist, or she professed to be an atheist. She had a drug history. She was coming out of a residential treatment program. And everything that was scary to me about foster care was related to her. And so I was very unsure about welcoming her into our home, but I felt like it was just a gospel opportunity. And so we did. We welcomed her into our home. We became very attached to her. It was very difficult. It was very trying. Mm-hmm. There was lots of hard days. We only had her in our home for 8 weeks until her 18th birthday. But I do want to just share with you a letter that she wrote on the last day. I'm not going to read the whole letter, but just a portion of it, because this is why Christians need to be involved in foster care. Our family is not perfect by any means, and we do not always glorify God as we should, but foster care is a wonderful opportunity to plant seeds of the gospel in the hearts of these kids. And so she was an atheist. She did not believe God. She did not want to go to church, all of those things. Of course, my husband's a pastor, so yeah, church is not going to work. Yeah. And so she would go early on and just sort of sit there, not wanting to be there. But then she began singing songs, and we just kind of saw God just soften. And she did not come to know Christ while she lived with us, but the seeds were planted. And this is what she wrote on the last day. She wrote a long letter the morning that she moved out of our home. But she said, "And most of all, thank you for showing me the way back to Christ. Mm. You've shown me how badly I needed God. I don't think I could have come to that conclusion on my own." Mm. And those words have just struck with me, and they just take me back to why we do what we do. We have an opportunity to show them Christ. And so it's just the reason why we are fostering, and is the reason why Christians need to get involved.
Krista, say that line again that she wrote. Thank you for what?
She said, "Most of all, thank you for showing me the way back to Christ.
Wow.
You've shown me how badly I needed God. I don't think I could have come to that conclusion on my own."
Oh, wow.
Man. Absolutely. And that's what we're called to, because I couldn't have come to Christ, you know, just without being discipled and someone sharing with me. And so how are they going to know if we don't bring them in their most desperate times and say, there is someone who loves you, has a plan for your life? What, man, we couldn't have written that any better. She did just a great job. And I know it just really, the Lord used that to strengthen your foundation, because it is scary to think about, okay, we're going to start fostering. Boom, here's some teenagers. I know some couples who are doing it. They're just absolutely called to it. But to start with that sometimes can be overwhelming. But then you read a letter like that, Kristen, it changes your world, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yes, definitely.
Mm.
Yeah, and those 8 weeks that you had with her will probably, it will change her eternity.
Right.
We need to pray that she will accept Christ. And wow, that's just amazing. What a great testimony. I love that.
Yeah.
Well, ladies, probably years ago, we never guessed we'd be together here on this podcast. Krista, you were a teenager. I was a mom of three kids. My husband was a pastor. Michelle was a pastor's wife. And we were all kind of in the same area. But the Lord has just... He's just blessed our yes. I think we'd all agree, and not that it's just all been easy, because it's been a lot hard. But, you know, knowing you all are there in it with me, and that we are on this together, and the Lord is working in all of our communities, in our hearts, and in our churches. I'm just so grateful for you two, Krista and Michelle, and thank you for being with us today.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Krista. I want to go.
Thank you, Michelle.
Foster care some more now.
Yeah. We're all going to start signing up again. That's right. I really appreciate you joining me today on the Adopting and Fostering Home podcast, which is a ministry of Sin Relief. If you enjoyed today's episode, share it with a friend, and you can find more information and subscribe at sinrelief.org. Thanks for listening and making us a part of your adoption and foster care journey.